Well, I thank you, well, the committee, and I thank Steve in particular that I've had a bit to do with over the last 6 months for the invitation to be here. It's really great to see folk, and I'm particularly pleased to see teams, because this is really the best way to happen. It's great if ministers come, but it's good if teams come, because otherwise ministers go back and say, oh, we had a seminar today and we learned X, Y, and Z, and then they've got to transmit that to the team. And so I'm really glad that people from staff teams or lay teams are here. That's very, very important. And particularly if you are not the preaching minister, I'm glad you're here today, and I hope you don't skip the last session and say, oh, that's just for the pastors, because I'm hoping that you will be able to encourage your ministers, if they are here, to do some of the sorts of things that we're talking about. So, you know, you can, sometimes we ministers, you know, we get, it's not an easy topic sometimes to deal with, or we don't think it is, and it's easy in one sense to wimp out. And ministers have got to learn how to do it graciously, lovingly, but firmly. And you can encourage them and assist them in that. So I'm glad you're here. One of the things Steve said is, we don't really know how to do it. And I certainly didn't know how to do it. I'd been the rector of Fig Tree for 10 years. And my basic methodology of raising money was, we need more money, please help. Now, that was true, but it wasn't hugely helpful, and it didn't inspire faith and hope, and it didn't have a gospel message to it. And then if I got stuck, I would preach a whole stack of sermons on money, you know, the rich fool and things like that, and the rich young ruler, and you know, and exhortations to the rich. And I just didn't find that preaching on money specifically. In fact, people stayed away. So I really had no idea. I remember when I went to my first parish as a curate at Beval in Ipswich. It was an Anglican church there. And I was a new addition to staff. They didn't have much money to put me on. The rector wasn't... he did some preaching, but I did a lot of the preaching. And I was given the money sermons to do. I had absolutely no idea. And I was... reduced, I remember, not having much of an idea. I preached on some money passages, obviously, but I remember resorting to funny little joke, like, I remember telling one that said, and I got it out of a joke book. I looked up a joke book on money. This is how clueless I was. And money in churches. And it sort of talked about this minister that had put out a special offertory box. And the offertory box, if you put in, $50, say, I can't remember what the terms would have been in those days, $50, you know, it rang a bell. And if you put $20 in, it blew a whistle. And if you put $5 in, it gave a little gurgle. And if you got less than $5, it took your picture. And they all laughed and giggled a bit at that. And I remember walking out the door, and there's one old lady talking to another old lady, and she's shaking her head, and she's saying, stupid clergy with their funny little boxes. She thought I'd meant it. So, you know, I just did not have any real idea. Until about 1995, I'd been in the parish about 8 years. The church sent myself and my wife over to a church crawl over the United States. And I ran into a couple of things at that. I heard Rick Warren give a talk on how he'd raised $22 million for his church. And I sat there and thought, this is different. And then somebody put me on to John Maxwell's material. He was the minister then of Skyline Wesleyan Methodist Church. And he had a series of tapes called Successful Stewardship. Now, these guys are Americans, and they don't do things our way. But I didn't think what they were doing was evil. I just thought it needed probably to be translated into Australianese. So I went back and started to use the sorts of things I'd learnt, and it became quite fruitful. And so at Fig Tree, we went from, at that year when I started to learn it, we went from $7,000, 10 years later we were on $23,000 a week. We raised about $5 million for ministry, for buildings. We raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for missions, and a whole stack more for special projects. Now, I'm not telling you that to say, look, what a good boy am I. I'm trying to say, this is possible and you can do it. And you can do it with great joy. And you can do it without having people generally leave. I'm not sure. I can't tell if anybody left Fig Tree because of this. But I know that there was normally great excitement in the congregation when we were doing these things because, it was, as you'll see, it's all linked to a gospel vision. So people started to ask me, how did you do some of this? And so I gave a few seminars, and then when I retired, I put it down in the book. The book is at the back. I would encourage you to take some of them because I don't want to be hunting them back to Brisbane again. The big pain about writing a book is that you hope, 50 million publishing houses around the world will pick it up and they'll be sold all over the world. Generally what happens is you sell it yourself at places like this. So I'd like not to be taking them home. And the great way to do it is to take a stack so you can all read it together. Now that will sell me more books, but it really is the best way to get it implemented into your church. So let me give you four pillars of which are the basic foundational principles on which you need to do this. Firstly, the senior minister is the chief resource raiser. And I know there are some treasurers here, and I love treasurers. As I said, my wife is an accountant. She is the treasurer for our body corporate. I had a magnificent couple of treasurers at Fig Tree. But what happens is that people get into their mind that when we have a money crisis, the treasurer will get up and say something. And I want to say to you, treasurers, your job is incredibly important, but that's not it, right? That's not it. It is the senior leader's job to be the chief resource raiser because the senior leader is the caster of the vision and generally the main preacher. And you cannot speak into the hearts and lives of people if you do not have that role. And if the treasurer gets up, then it becomes a money issue rather than a spiritual issue. No matter how good the treasurers might be. Now, it might be good sometimes to have the treasurer back you up on something. And I'm not saying by any means that treasurers don't have a fantastic role. They do. I'm just simply saying this one isn't it. Now, I'll tell you another story to illustrate the importance of senior ministers being the chief resource raiser. I cannot, if you take nothing else away, take that away. I'm not telling you this story to say what a good boy Rod is, but just to illustrate a principle. A couple of years ago now, one of the churches in Brisbane, one of the evangelical churches, which had had a strong history, but it had fallen on sadder days a little bit. Still some good ministers there, but it had its glory days many years before. They rang me up, and the minister rang me up, and he said, "Could you send me over one of your books?" I don't know how he'd heard of it, because we've got a project over here. And so I sent him over a book. And he then said, "Oh, well, okay, this is good. Could you send another 12? Because I want the parish council all to read this book." And so I did. And then he rang me up and he said, "Would you come and speak to the parish council on this?" So I did. I spent one session speaking to the parish council. That's about all I did. There was one follow-up visit where one of the parish councillors came to get some material from me, but that was all I did, just went and gave them one talk, and they bought the book. Now, the interesting thing was that they had a project that there were some big dilapidated halls next to the church, and that was going to cost about $1 million to refurbish. They were sort of, they'd been built in the 40s, and they really needed to be done up for ministry. And the challenging thing was that the project had been gestating for a number of years. And in the October before I got this phone call, I got the phone call around about March, in the October before that, their minister resigned very suddenly. So the project was all pretty much ready to go, and the minister resigns. And they thought, what do? We've had this going. We want to keep it going. Now, to keep it going without a senior minister, okay, is a big challenge. But they still wanted to do it. And it took them over a year, well over a year, to get another senior minister. So in the meantime, they were given a locum, working part-time, 2 to 3 days a week, and he was 83. He was the guy who contacted me. And so he got these parish councillors around, and they decided they would go and do it. And I went away from the meeting thinking, full marks for trying, but this is a big ask, because I've seen people wimp out on projects much more than that. The first thing I said to them, they were thinking about selling property. I said, whatever you do, don't sell property unless an absolute resort. You see, the problem with selling property, you can never get it back. Okay? So that's the default thought with people. If they got a project, oh, we've got a bit of land over there, let's sell it. We've got a hall over there, let's do it. I've seen it happen all the time. It's tragic, because often it's in prime spots and you never, ever get that thing back. So you can't do gospel ministry in it at another time. So I said, look, you've got this other youth house. Don't sell it, except at a last resort. Cut a long story short, they had their commitment day, and I'll talk to you about that later, and it raised 10 times what the parish had ever raised before, ever, for anything. They raised about $600,000. It was a $1 million project, but they could split it into 2 bits. They were absolutely over the moon. They just couldn't believe it. Well, I could believe it at one level because I'd seen the sorts of things happen before. But I was astonished because they were doing this with a part-time rector who was 83. So if your ministers are out there, if you're thinking, gee, you know, this is a bit of a formidable challenge, I'm telling you, you can do this. You really, really can do this. And any time you think, gee, this is too hard, think of an 83-year-old guy doing it part-time. I just got to hold my hand up to him. But the other thing was they had a group of can-do elders. A number of them came from Pentecostal churches, interestingly enough, and they don't have any worries about jumping in on money projects. So they were gung-ho. And the others had been, some of them were there, older people that had been there from the glory days, and they wanted the church to go ahead. So they had a dynamic leader, even though he was 83, and they had a committed parish council that just wanted to make it happen. They obviously executed a very good campaign. And as far as I know, the church is going very, very well. So, and they've got a new minister, which is great, who wants to take the project forward. So my point is, the first point is, you need to have that leadership of the senior leader. He needs to be the one who, or she needs to be the one who is taking the thing forward and not delegating it off to somebody else to give a money announcement. Now, does anybody want to come back to me on that? Yep. I will. There's a number of money raisings in the Bible, and I will talk about it, but obviously Paul in 2 Corinthians 8, 9 is the missionary, but he's also the leader. There is Moses raising the resources for the tabernacle. There is David raising for the temple. You will also find Nehemiah in a very muted sense. You will find actually that he was a leader in the giving, but I can come back to that a little bit later because that's a little bit more muted. But those are the things. But my other point is, if you are preaching into this and you are casting vision, that's normally the leader's job. Okay? So, all right, that's the first thing. The leader, the church needs a credible, shared vision of the future. The key term is that money follows vision. It doesn't follow need. I mean, I remember learning that for the first time when Rick Warren spoke it in America. And he talked about the fact that there are zillions of needy organisations in the world, but big institutions like Harvard and Yale have got pots and pots of money. In one sense, they don't need it. But another level, because they're casting big vision and they've got this great reputation as institutions, people give them money. And so getting up and telling people what your need is not really going to cut it. And I will show you a little in the next slide. But the point is, there is a wonderful book, and I reference it in the back of my book, called Passing the Plate by Christian Smith and a couple of other authors. And it's a sociological examination of giving in American churches. Sociology, looking at the dynamics of why people give. And they say there are two sorts of churches. And I, after reflection over about 10 years, I totally believe this. Two sorts of churches. One is live the vision, and two is pay the bills. Okay? That's one of the reasons why it shouldn't be the treasurer who gets up, because the treasurer is on the pay the bills side of it. Even though they're very nice people and they do a great job. You know, the church has a problem, and so everybody looks to the treasurer as the poor person who's got up and has got to expand this problem and say, please give us a bit more money. That's not the way it's done. The great churches, the churches that raise enormous amounts of money for gospel ministry, are the ones who paint a big picture about what God is going to do, or what they're praying. You can't tell God what to do, but what they're praying that God will do in this place, and then ask people to come on board and support that vision. That's the senior leader's job, and I will expand a little bit on that in the next slide. You need to teach generosity. It's got to be faith-raising, not fundraising. If I could get all of you never to use the word fundraising again, I would be a happy man. It slips out. Occasionally it slips out to me. But funds are money, right? Money comes on the coattails of raising a vision for God and the faith of the people who are giving it. So that was where my big understanding came. Remember I said I preached for a number of weeks on money as a younger minister. You know, three or four sermons on money, people stayed away. I just was asked by a church to give them four sermons on generosity. Well, I thought that was probably too much, but since they wanted it, I couldn't do four, I did three. But generosity is a different animal, right? When I'm preaching on money, people think I'm trying to get at you. But when I'm preaching on generosity, people want to be generous. If you tell me that I'm stingy, that I don't really like that. But if you said, Rod, you're a generous sort of person, that builds me up and it elevates you. And it's a very strong scriptural word. And so I changed my whole emphasis to encouraging generosity. It's got a very strong themes in the Bible, and nobody debates that it's basically there and that we should actually be generous. And the word generous, there's a range of words, and often grace and generosity are linked. So very strong biblical theology. So please, if I can do anything, if you're using the word fund, please rip it out of your diary. Never use it again. Anybody jumps up and says it, take them aside quietly and whack them over the head. If your minister starts slipping into it, grab him. If your treasurer gets up and starts talking about money, get your minister to pull them down again. Love them, but it's got to be the senior minister talking about generosity and not about funds. Funds are about money. People don't give to funds. They give to faith. They give to life. They give to hope. They give to big dreams. They give to big visions. They give to people getting saved. They get to give to winning Canberra. That's what they give for. They don't give to fill your fix your budget problem. And finally, you need a generous, gracious way to ask. That's the big thing. How do you actually ask on money? I didn't know. Didn't have a clue. But you need to be able to have some way to do it. You need to have a form of words that you're comfortable with, that you can go to your congregation and say, I would like you to support this. Now, those four in the book, if I added any one as a pillar, and I've got it referenced in the book, but I didn't put it as a pillar, you've got to have squeaky clean financial management. And that's where you need great treasurer and great counting things. That really is a pillar, because people will not give to you if they don't trust you. If you are seen to be dodgy with the money, if you are seen to be taking money and using it for different purposes, even if it's for good purposes, but purposes you didn't say. If people think that the money is not being collected properly, if they think it's not being banked properly, if they think it's being wasted, they won't give it. You know, it's just a death wish. So that's probably a fifth one that I haven't got down there. Let me pause. You want to come back on any of that? Yes. Thank you. And let me say, as somebody who is now 71, I'm moving in that direction. I'm very pleased to be affirmed like that. Thank you. Anyone else? But yes, I totally agree. Thank you. That is absolutely correct. I would say that the treasurer and whatever teams he or she has count the money, right? You raise the money. But when you raise the money, it comes in. You don't touch it. They touch it. So there was only one key in the church that I didn't have, and that was the key to the safe. I never put a finger on the counting of the money. Now I was keen to know that it was administered properly. Like we always had a number of counters, and they couldn't be husband and wife, and things like that. And I would say, sadly, I've heard quite a number of stories of embezzlement. So you've really got to put in practices in place and say to people, this is not because I don't love you. This is a practice that is protecting us. I mean, I heard of one church where $250,000 was embezzled by one counter. So this it's got to be very carefully administered. But my point to you is, you will be the chief resource raiser, and the treasurer will oversee, and others in the Anglican system. I had wardens, and the wardens were the people who oversaw the money underneath, and the treasurer worked with them. But I never touched it. And I didn't have the key to the safe. Well, I don't think I specifically made that. I mean, I don't think I made that as a public declaration, but it wouldn't be that I wouldn't have done it. I just didn't particularly do it. People around me knew, and the leadership team, and the staff knew, and the parish council knew, and other leaders knew, but I don't think I actually formally made that. And maybe I should have. I don't know. I could have maybe woven it into a sermon somewhere, but I just didn't do it. But I think it was pretty. People sort of knew that wasn't mine. But I was all over the figures. I really wanted to know what the figures were. I mean, it wasn't that when the figures came in, I wanted to know. It wasn't just, oh, look, there's the things. I was very keen to know what was going on, but I didn't formally touch the dollars and cents. Okay, now, let me give you an illustration of a pay the bills. And the thing I'm begging you not to do. This is true. This was what I saw in a church on holidays. Quite a good church, a church with a significant ministry, but they kept doing this year after year. And I went back on a number of times on holidays, and I nearly rang the minister and said, I just got to stop this terrible practice. But I just thought, no, that's sticking your nose in, pull your head in, and don't do it. But this happened. This is pretty much straight from their bulletin. Up till the end of October 2010, offerings have averaged $9,381 a week, well below budget, and a little less than 2009. In other words, we're going backwards. I want to tell you what it's saying, and I want to tell you what they're hearing. Okay. While expenses are below budget, we have not been able to contain them to the same extent as the offerings are down. Well, this is more bad news. We expect to finish 2010 with a budget shortfall of approximately $24,000. You know, we're going backwards fast. No budgeted change of staff is currently in place. In other words, we're not doing anything to go forward. We're not doing any more big expansion, gospel-fulfilling ministries. We're just marking time and hoping the water doesn't fill the ship up too much. Expenses reflect current trends with some allowances for cost increases. In other words, we're going to deal with inflation, but we're not going to deal with gospel ministry. Going down to the next slide, offerings are budgeted for so much per week next year. This is a 732 per week increase on the current offerings. Our average Sunday attendance is close to 400. So if each person attending puts an extra $2 in, we will be covered. This is lunacy. Do you know why? Because money doesn't come equally. The bigger givers give more than the smaller ones. If I ask you to give $2 a week, you know, you hear this stuff, just a cup of coffee, okay? Everybody can do that. Well, half the people don't put any money in at all. That's one of the statistics you find from the States where they count everything. What you need is the big givers to give a lot of money to help this out, and the small givers to give in proportion, because that's the way it works. 80% of people give 20% of the money, and 20% of people give 80% of the money. So if you ask the big giver who can afford to give an extra $100 a week to give $2, he'll give you the $2. If you ask the person who gives to give you the $2 a week, they may or may not give it. So that is a strategy for complete and utter failure. Now, you might say it like this. You might say, that just looks like a cup of coffee. But what we're asking you to do is, those of you who God has blessed with abundant resources, you are the ones we're asking to give an abundant amount, because the scripture talks about giving as you are able. And you have been blessed by God, and we're asking you to help us with this. And so I'm asking those of you who've got great resources to be maybe giving us an extra $100 a week. Those of you who might be very small, you might be just giving the widow's mite. But the whole business about $2 a week extra or extra cup of coffee is just not the way people give. It's not the way the scriptures talk about. It's just a mathematical formula, and it fails all the time. And people keep doing it. People who've read the book keep doing it. I've seen it happen. I went to a church recently, and they'd all read my book, and they were doing all sorts of crazy things, and I smiled and just let them do it. Okay, and the final one is, if the offertory is not reached the budgeted amount in the first quarter of next year, the leadership team sees little alternative but at the time to recommend the church reducing staff. In other words, we will go down even further. We will do less vision. We'll do less ministry. We will save less, fewer people for Jesus. In other words, the whole thing is a downward spiral. Do you come away from if you're a congregational member, do you come away with joy in your heart for that? You don't. You know, the way you fix that is that you acknowledge it, no doubt about it, but you say, we want to win Canberra for Jesus. And in order to win Canberra for Jesus, we're not only going to fix this problem next year, we're going to do this extra stuff. And I'm asking you to help me because of all these people that are going to get saved. And we're praying. And we want to put on an extra staff person to work in children's ministry, because our children are important to God, and they're the next generation of our church and the next generation of our leadership. And we're not going to stop at nothing. And I will not put a staff member off. I used to say to Fig Tree, I will crawl around this parish on my hands and knees before we reduce the staff position. Not necessarily reduce the staff member. Sometimes they had to come and go. But a staff position, I wasn't going to sack the children's minister because I didn't have enough money. That's lunacy. The thing is, you cast a great vision for what you're going to do when this shortfall, which is temporary, is going to be overcome. All right, I got a little bit excited there, but I feel it very strongly because I go into these churches and they drive me insane. I don't mind the ones that that don't know what to do. What I do mind the ones are the ones who know what to do and still keep doing the same crazy thing. Can you come back on that? Sure. Look, there's a couple of things I can add to that. It's not wrong to let people know where you are, okay? But I wouldn't necessarily do it like that. What I'm going to be proposing to you is everything gets put in terms of vision. And I don't put it as a money report. I used to put it as a ministry report. These are the things that are happening exciting in ministry. And it didn't have to be a huge thing. It might have been just a little paragraph. You know, 20 kids going saved at the camp. Great women's convention happened this week. Sunday school numbers doing X, Y, and Z. And many other things. And I would put, to sustain this great gospel outreach, our requirements are X a week. Currently, we're getting X minus Y. I want to thank every one of you for giving and pray that you will give some more. Okay. It's the way it's framed. What I would put, and I haven't got it in my notes, so I'll stick it in now while I think of it. At the bottom of every, on page 3, if you've got a bulletin that's sort of like that, I'd put it, that's the front part looking like that. You open up in the middle. Your eyes generally work down there. All right? What I would put there is I would put, and I learnt this from a clever associate I had, I would put, please remember Fig Tree Anglican Church in your will. Or I put and one of my wardens gave me about 4 ways to do it. So we had 4 versions of that. And I would put it in every week and I wouldn't say anything about it. Now, what happened was, the guy that talked to me about it, gave me a book, he talked about a big church in the United States that had done this, and in a couple of years, nothing happened. Okay? But by 25 years, they were getting a bequest every month. And you want it going drip, 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 drip. Now, I didn't make a big song and dance about it. I thought about maybe going to my older people and encouraging them. I immediately myself went to our solicitor and put the church in unwill, so I did it myself. And then we found that we got we have got it, Fig Tree, and I hope my successor and my successor's successor will be blessed. But the odd thing is, people wanted to keep cutting it out of the bulletin. If I didn't jump up and down on my secretary, she would leave it out. I said to her, I don't care what else doesn't go in this bulletin, but that goes in every week. And so that's why the wardens came to me, so we varied it, but it was always there, and it just dripped. And we got probably the best part of $1 million in bequests that I know of, not let alone the ones I don't know of. Isn't that awesome? That's the Pentecostal be saying amen, brother, or amen, sister, or hallelujah, or praise Jesus. I think that just is just fantastic. And maybe you can have a bit of a look and see exactly what they put in there, because this is a no-brainer. It's so easy. It's so easy, and you don't have to do anything. But trust me, people will want to leave it out. And but yeah, that's just an easy way. It's not in my notes; it's in the book. But yes. So thank you, and thank you for that endorsement. I was scared when you put your hand up; you were going to crucify me for doing something. But I totally agree. Well, you're a highly intelligent person. Okay. Anyone else want to come back on any of that? Yes. And it's even more today because this is maybe working on things where people turned up every week. I used to get totally frustrated with people who didn't come every week at Fig Tree, but now I'm retired. I don't even go to my own church every week. I mean, I can be away for weeks and weeks and weeks preaching here somewhere or on holidays or on some going to see the grandchildren or whatever it is. So I'm much more sympathetic to people who don't turn up every week. They get my money through electronic giving, but yes. So you've got to keep doing it, and that goes with any notice. I just want to say any notice you're trying to give. That's really important has got to be given multiple times. And I remember this because my wife Helen is as on board with the gospel as anybody could possibly be. She's a professor of accounting, so she's smart. She goes to church every week. And I have remember talking to her, you know, we're still lying on the pillows talking, and she said, "What's going on about X?" And I said, "I've talked about that in notices every week for the last 6 weeks." And I'm thinking, if you do not know, right, what are the rest of them thinking? So, yeah, I totally agree with you. It is just so important to over-communicate. The thing is, you've got to do it in slightly different ways. You know, you might not say the same words, the same message, but you've got to get it coming in, bang, 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 bang. Okay, I better keep on moving. There are two sorts of resource raising that you need to do. One is ongoing weekly offertory and small projects. That's what we'll be talking about mainly for the rest of this session. Two, major building projects. And there's an overlap with those, of course, but there's a certain dynamical difference with them. And then often tossing into that, you might have big mission projects. If the church I go to has an outreach mission month that they raise $500,000 a year for. And so that's a significant amount of money. They also have a compassion month, and they raise a whole stack more with that too. So there's generally different sorts. So this first thing, I'm basically talking to you about how to get your offertories up and how to raise money for small projects like, say, refurbing the kitchen or redoing the car park or buying new computer system for the church or whatever. Okay, what I learnt this from John Maxwell, and again I think it's got a scriptural basis to it, though I didn't know about it at the time, was the conduct an annual commitment day. And on the annual commitment day, I asked the congregation to do two things. I asked them to sign a financial commitment for next year, actually sign a card. I gave them out a card. I can talk to you about what I gave out. And I've got some examples of that too in the book. And asked them, I'd ask them to go home and pray about this and bring back the card. I kept giving it out every week in case, just like you were saying there, in case people forgot or the dog ate my commitment card and all that sort of stuff. But I'd ask them to sign a card and give it in, but I wanted them to sign their name. Very important to get them to sign their name. Not all of them will, but the ones who do give you the vast majority of the money. And secondly, to give a special offering to support special projects. Now, we did that every year for 10 years, and I can talk to you about the results of that a little bit later on. So that was our methodology, and I want to then flesh out just what we did in that. And I was very, very direct and definitive on that. And I want to show you a video in just a moment if you can play. But this video Some of you will know Yvonne Gunning, who was my children minister for a while. Very energetic lady is Yvonne. And she came to me once and said that there was a puppeteer in the congregation. And we got this puppeteer to freshen up, because this was done when I'd been there 8 or 9 years, and I thought the whole process needed to be made fresh, to be made renewed, like we were talking about before. And so I got the puppeteer to talk with the puppet about Commitment Day. And the other good thing is, once you're done with a puppet, puppets can do outrageous things and say outrageous things that you can't say. Now, I had talked to the puppeteer about what I wanted. There were some main themes in it. And then she ad-libbed it. So she didn't ad-lib it exactly the way I would have liked it, but I was still pretty pleased with the result. And the result I could show over and over again if I wanted to. And what I want you to do is look at it and just spend a couple of moments talking amongst yourselves about what you see in it. Okay. While we're getting the that sound fixed, I'll just go into the next sheet for just for a second and see what let the guys have a play around with that. It won't come up on the screen because they're dealing with that. But if you can go to the next sheet that says some key issues. I want you to know that this applies anywhere. It applies to big churches. It applies to small churches. It applies to country churches, it applies to city churches. The genesis of it was John Maxwell's first church in southern Indiana, or Illinois, I think it was, and they had about 3 people in the congregation, and that's it grew to 300 in 3 years. Maxwell is a leader. But the reason it works, if you want to put it that way, is it's... Okay, looks like we're going to... Are we getting somewhere? Thank you. I'll come back to that.
Well, Sally, it's that time of year again where we're coming to sign a commitment card. A what? A commitment card. Which is what? Well, it's where we commit to giving for the next year. Giving what? Money. I gotta give money to somebody. Not to somebody. To God. Well, here's a somebody. Well, here's a somebody. But yes, we're committing that every week when we come to church, we're gonna give a certain amount every week. I can't do that. How am I going to know how much money I've got coming in the next month? Let alone the next year. What do you think I am? No. This is a faith exercise. I don't like exercise. This is a good exercise. You have faith. If you commit to a certain amount every week, yeah, you have faith that God will make sure that money is there. What? We have to give money to the church. I know. Then Yvonne will get a jacuzzi. Yvonne's not getting a jacuzzi. Brad's getting a jacuzzi. Nobody's getting a jacuzzi. Shh. The money is to help the church with all the ministries that are involved with the church. We commit, and that helps the church for the next year grow and expand and do all the things that it needs to do. But I don't know how much money I'm going to have coming in. Well, you just need to have faith and trust in God. If I've got my details down here, then, you know, the CIA can track me. The CIA is not going to track you. Nobody is going to see this card except for Rod. He's going to see it, yes, and the administrator. That's it. That's it. There's not going to be like a list on the notice board. No list on the notice board. The only people that will see it are the people that need to see it. Just Rod and the administrator. They need to know what's coming in for the next year. But nobody else is going to see it. This is between you and God. Wow. But, you know, it's very scary. It is very scary. What if I can't give very much? It doesn't matter how much you give. You need to talk to God and you need to work out what is right for you. But what if I can't give as much as, you know, you? You don't even need to see what I'm giving. You don't need to know what anybody else in the church is giving. It's not a comparison. It's not a competition. Who cares what everyone else is giving? It's between them and God, not between you. You give what you can manage. And I have to, you know, sign it. Well, if you put your name on this and you sign it, it means that you're making that commitment. It helps you know that you've made a commitment. Then it's very scary. It is a little bit scary. And don't worry, you're not the only one. Every single person that signs this is a little bit nervous, but it's okay. We just need to have faith in our God, that, and he will provide.
Well, I guess I can do it.
Well, I guess you can.
I think I'm going to sign it.
Okay, off you go.
Okay, here we go. That's good.
Okay, just for a couple of moments, just turn to whoever was close by you and say, what did you see in that? What was going on? Okay, could I pull you up there? I'm just watching my time. But what did you see? Can you talk to me a little bit about what do you think was going on in that video? Yes. Anyone else? Yes, very clear. Yep. I used to sign my card in front of the congregation every year. I mean, I had four or five congregations that I was dealing with, and I did the major bulk of the preaching. But every year I would hold my card out and I would put it there and I would sign it in front of them. Now, obviously, I'd probably signed it in number one and I was re-signing it for the other ones, but I did that just because the clarity is absolutely necessary, yes.
One of the things I liked about that was watching two people have a conversation about this stuff rather than just a kind of broadcast.
A talking head, yes.
But I don't think we expect people to talk about money stuff one-to-one.
And Yvonne, of course, was Yvonne Gunning, and so Yvonne can get a jacuzzi. I didn't think of that line. She thought of that line. I thought that was quite good. But in other words, we're not going to waste the money. That's what that was saying. But see, it's interesting. You can say we will not waste your money, or we can say have a puppet say so Yvonne can get a jacuzzi. Says the same thing, but a little bit smarter. All right, I need to press on just because I'd like to keep going with some more things, but we need to try and move this along. Okay, as I said, applies whatever because it's biblical principles. Secondly, it's essential to sign the cards. And you noticed up there that I know. And I said to the congregation, the reason that I am knowing is that this is a faith issue, it's not a money issue. Right? And I would tell them a story something like this. Supposing I take a guy out to lunch, take Jack out to lunch, and we talk at lunch, and Jack goes home to his wife, and he said, what did Rod talk to you about today? Oh, I said, a pretty heavy talk with Rod. He asked me about my prayer life. And he put the hard word on me about whether I was praying. And then he asked how our marriage was going. And then he asked about whether I was loving my kids and what I was doing about that, and was I reading my Bible? I mean, it was. But I suppose I'd say this. But I suppose that's what we pay him to do, right? Well, Jesus says, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." You see, your treasure is the barometer of your soul. not according to Rod, according to Jesus. And so if I am saying that the minister can know what your prayer life's like, what your marriage is like, what your Bible reading plan is like, but don't touch my money, get away from that. You're saying that my money is something between me and me, and it's not a spiritual issue, it's a money issue. So I tried to nail that front and centre. Very interesting, a guy called Keith, great guy in the congregation, came up to me after. He said, Rod, we've been out to lunch. You've never asked me any of those other questions. Oh, gee, this is bad. So I determined, and that was a real slap in the face from me. He's a lovely bloke. He didn't mean it to be a slap in the face. But I determined that every time I took somebody out to lunch, I would ask them those questions. Every time. And so my pastoral ministry got far more focused. And I told the same story the next year. And I pointed to Keith, and I told them what Keith had said to me and how embarrassed I was and doing that. So, yes, I knew it wasn't broadcast to anybody else except the treasurer and the little team of people who counted, because I wanted to say this is not about money. It's about your heart. It's about the relationship with God. And I didn't do all that much with it. I can tell you later on what I did do with it, but I didn't go around sort of checking up on people or anything like that. But that was important. This process got the endorsement of the board and the staff. It wasn't done just by me. The parish council endorsed the process. And I got the parish council and the staff to put their cards in first. And I announced their collective amount the week before. Didn't announce their individual amount. I announced their collective amount beforehand, because I wanted them to have skin in the game. And I wanted to be able to say to the congregation, the leadership of this church is not asking you to do anything they will not do themselves. Okay? And so it was very direct. So we did that. Now, here is the controversial bit. I know it's controversial, but I always announced my amount. And the reason that I did that was there is a great giving thing in 1 Chronicles 29, have to give money for the temple, and we'll talk a lot more about that later on next time we're raising money for a building. But in that, King David says, I am going to give an absolute gigantuan bucket of money out of the royal treasury. And then he says, I'm reaching into my own wallet and I'm going to give a gigantic bucket of money. And he states the exact amount. Then the elders say, this is fantastic. And their collective amount is stated. And then the people rejoice. And they've obviously given. But it doesn't say their specific amount. Okay? And so I thought, this is what leaders do. Leaders lead in some way. People want to wimp out on that. And I know that there's don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. And I would suggest to you that to apply it in this case is taking it right out of context. But I did that. I did that every year I was the rector of Fig Tree. And I said to them, I am doing this because I am the leader of this congregation and leaders have got to lead. And the day I stop being the leader will be the day I stop. Don't do it anymore. Won't tell you what I'm giving now, but I did then. Because I had a different role then. And I know it's controversial and we can debate it a little bit later on. But I saw it as a leadership thing. Yes. I think I gave it as a weekly offering that my wife and I were going to give. We actually sat there and talked about it. She's naturally more generous than I am. I'm Scots-Irish, I'm stingy. But I was forced to do that. And what the good thing was that we sat, good thing about this, was that the first time we ever did it, I thought we were giving at least 10% of our offering. So we actually sat down and did a calculation. I was miles out. We increased our offering about 40% one year, the first year we did it, because I just had been slack. And not that I wasn't desiring to give, I just hadn't been doing my sums. And so every year I did my sums after that. You've got to do advanced planning to do this. I've had people ring me up and say, oh, look, we're a bit short on money. I'd like to do a commitment day in a couple of weeks. What do I do? I'll show you the process, but I started this months in advance. And I would suggest to you that anything you are doing in church life, you start months in advance. Because you won't do it well. You'll dither around on doing it. So we started Christmas planning in July. I wanted my worship team to be starting Easter planning around about October. Because if you're going to do something great that's going to win people to the Lord, you want to be producing great sermons or having great outreach, it just takes a lead time. You need to get volunteers on board. Volunteers need to be up to speed. If you're giving volunteers orders or requests in the last minute, they're busy. You've got to give volunteers a long lead time. So I started 6 months in advance on this. Didn't do it every single day, but I was planning the process. And I certainly started planning my preaching 6 months out. Okay, what were the components of a commitment day? What did we do to lead up with it? Well, ours fell in November. That was just the natural time of the year it worked because Fig Tree was originally All Saints. And All Saints Day came in early November. And back in 1987, they still thought about it as All Saints Fig Tree. It's now it's called FAC, and they just think about Fig Tree Anglican Church and the All Saints calendar. But that was where the thing landed. And it was a good time. But I started the preaching thing, as I said, 6 months before. In June, I would put out a questionnaire. And the questionnaire was one thing we could we do well and one thing we could improve in, right? Because I wanted to know from the congregation what their perceptions of the ministry were, but I just didn't want them to be a royal whinge. So I wanted to know what the good things that they liked and the things that they thought would be improvement. And sometimes, on the improvement scale, you know, you'll get, we need more organ, or we need more rock and roll in our singing. Well, you know, if you get 50 people either way, well, you've basically got, can't do too much there, half of them like something, or the music's too loud, or the music's too soft. But if people are screaming at you, fix the toilets in the children's ministry centre, well, that's wonderful, because then you've got a project. And then you go out to the people and say, everybody has identified this as a project. This is what we're going to have as our project for this year. Thank you for telling us. And you get the opportunity to respond to the things that they're thinking is needing to be done. So we did a lot of that. And I would get the projects. Well, I'll talk a bit to you more about those in a minute. But it also fostered an attitude of openness. And big mistake I made was I got people to sign their names on these, and then we published the results, but I forgot to tell the office to leave some of the names off. And so I wanted the results to be published anonymously, but the first time we did it at the office, I stuck all the names on. They just, you know, just had a big sheet with little lines and then the names next to them, and I got crucified for that. So we did it again, but I just made sure the office left the names off, and I went out and ate humble pie and apologised. But it was a very, very helpful practice. But not only did we get information, people thought this is a transparent church. They really, really want our input. So I did that about July, and sometimes we would get projects. Often we would get the projects to be done later on out of that survey. We had a commitment card that was mailed out beforehand, that was also put in the bulletins every week. I wanted everybody to get it in mail. I wanted it to be reinforced in the bulletins, so if they'd forget it, and I'd make a bit of a joke about it, you know, the dog ate my commitment card and things like that, that where you had to tick the amount and sign your name, and this would be promoted in notices, in bulletins, on the internet, Twitter. Oh, we didn't have Twitter in those days, but I'd be asking my tech savvy people. I don't understand all that stuff, but I'd get a team of young people today and say, how do I get this commitment card out into your blogosphere, so to speak? And this needs to be promoted over a 5 or 6 week period in every conceivable way that you can. and you need to have it available. So even on the day when they bring it back, you have the commitment cards in the bulletin for people who've forgotten to do anything about it. We also then had commitment day projects, and we ran about six. Now, this is really important, because these are in addition to what they're going to give next year. This is an end-of-year request for extra support. Now, here is a thing to notice. People will give to what turns their heart on, okay? And people will say from time to time, oh, look, if we have extra projects, we want everything to go to mission this year. And if we have extra projects, that will decrease what gets given to mission. Basically, that's a flaw. People give what's on their heart. And there are people in your congregation who love mission. And they just love it. And they want to give to it. And there are others who, for whatever, and I agree with those people, but there are others who are suspicious of missions. Goes overseas. Somebody gets the money. Administrators take the money. Some African dictator will take the money, you know? So you can jump up and down about the missionary project till the heart, till the cows come home, and you won't get them. But those other people might be thinking, I'm watching those toilets, and my children go into those toilets, and there's white ants in those toilets, and they're dirty, and they need to be fixed. Fix the toilets, you know? So there'll be people who will give to maintenance, they'll give to missions, they will give to buildings. Some people won't give a brass razoo to buildings, others get it. You need buildings for ministry. Some people will give to mercy ministry, you know, caring for people, loving people, good thing to give, and that can be tax deductible. Some people will give to music. Music can be tax deductible, right? The government allows tax deductible music funds. Education can be tax deductible. And there's another lovely one, and I learnt this from a minister who ran a big Pentecostal church. He had one called Our Church, Our Ministry, which is just code for give us a pile of money that the rector and the elders can spend any way they like. That's a lovely, lovely thing. And if there's high confidence in the ministry, I was always astonished at how much money came in for that. Really was. But it can be used to plug holes, to do extras, to seed fund new staff, to help over the line other projects that haven't got enough money, to pay for the background expenses in running the commitment day. But it just means that at the end of the year, instead of going out to the people bleating for more money, you know, you've got some sort of shortfall in the budget. Well, you don't have to go out and cry poor, because people have already given you this. And if you've got high confidence in the ministry, then they will give to that, and they did very well. I'm just watching our time. All right, what I want to do is to show you a couple of videos that go with that, and I've got a few more slides there. Look, I'll show you. Look, can we play the next one? A problem for Bruce. This was we had a commitments project to seed fund a new minister. Some of you even might know this guy, and the main guy on it is Bruce Clark, and the rest of the people were staff members at the time. And you might know the bloke we were raising money for.
Bruce, need your help, mate? We've got to reach these guys. We're struggling. We need your help.
Thanks, Lee. I'll write a note and get back to you.
Okay, we need you.
Bruce.
Hi, Vaughn.
You know that new jelly bean squid Brianne's trying to get up and going?
Yeah. Yep.
Can you come and set up a meeting with us to give us ideas about how to connect with the mums?
Oh. I'll write a note. I'll get back to you.
Thanks.
Hi, Bruce. You got a moment?
Yeah. Good to see you, Louise.
Yeah, just over in pastoral care, we've just got some new ideas of reaching out to our community, and we're just wondering if you could just come in and help us with some evangelism ideas.
Great idea. Can I get back to you?
Okay. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, Louise.
Bruce.
Hi, Ron. Listen, mate, I need all my leaders trained in how to share the gospel.
You want help too?
Come right on, it's urgent. Yeah, right now, man. There's souls at stake here. Let's go.
Can I get back to you?
Oh, man, I need it now. What am I going to do?
I'll write a note and I'll give you a call.
Bruce, there's a guy in the car park. He wants to be saved.
He wants to be saved now.
Can you save him? Right now. Can you save him?
I'll get back to you, Clark.
Saved.
Tell him I'll come later.
He's in the car park now.
Yeah, I'll come later. I've just got to fix something up for Rod.
You can't save him.
Sorry.
Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Hi, Luke.
How's it going?
Great.
Really?
Yeah.
Heaps good. Hey, we got Rookie coming soon.
Yeah?
We need someone to preach.
You want me to preach?
Yeah, and follow up afterwards.
And Rookie?
It's really important.
I'll get back to you.
Okay. That'd be great.
Thanks, mate.
Bruce, there's someone in the front office who wants to talk about God. Can you come now?
Tell them to come back tomorrow.
Hopeless.
Bruce. Hundreds of musos at the front door just going, Jesus, tell us about Jesus. Help us, mate, please.
Can't they find another church to come to? Why do they want to come here for, Drew?
All right.
What's with this church? It's just going bananas. Jolly want me to solve everyone's evangelistic problems. How am I going to do it? You know what? I need help. Hey, I've got an idea.
I'm Stuart.
And I'm Carolyn.
And we're the Stars. And we're really looking forward to coming down to sunny Wollongong and starting our new life down here, and in particular getting to know you guys and getting involved in what it is that God has prepared for us here. And I guess that particularly will be evangelism and also working with the 24 to 30-year-olds. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Honestly, Bruce's role has expanded as the church has expanded. He's a busy guy, preaching, teaching. He helps me in a whole range of leadership and management activities. He supervises staff. He's involved in FCOM as well as just simply caring and loving for a lot of people. And frankly, evangelism hasn't been getting the attention that we would think that it needs to get. So that's why I'm really excited that Stuart and Carolyn Starr have agreed to join us. Stuart's a fourth year Moore College guy. He's theologically trained. He's just a really great young guy who we know fits our church. He's got a great heart for God. He's got a great heart for the gospel. And he's a good communicator. And we're looking for him to energize and bring a whole range of impetus to our evangelism ministry and also to our young adults ministry in the older section of those young adults. So please support that as a great opportunity this coming commitment day. Bruce is now the rector of Manly, where it's going gangbusters, and Stuart is doing a very good job at Oran Park, and a number of the others, Yvonne, as you know, is now out at Cootamunda, isn't it? And Ron, one of the other blokes, has just become the rector of West Pennant Hills, so, and others have gone on to other great things too. Look, I'm just racing a little bit now because I know it's just about morning tea time, and so let me just make a couple of comments rather than break you up. The thing I wanted to do was to make the videos funny. I didn't have anything to do with making that. That's not my creativity. Other people did it. But I wanted to have videos that I could show, and people would love it. People would just be wanting to see it. The staff would be wanting me to play it. They'd all want to be looking at themselves. We didn't have a red cent to put Stuart on. We did not have one brass razu. It was going to cost us an extra $100,000 a year by the time we got his salary and on costs and all the rest of it on. And we just did it. And prayed and held our breath and just went and did it. But that just gave a visual impetus to it all. And I just cannot tell you how much making the videos did. We used to raise money for those, those projects, and Yvonne came up with a smart idea. One year, she made a video to go with a children's ministry project she had. And I noticed a spike in the offertories, a significant spike. And so I thought, gee, next year I made three or four videos, and the money jumped from something like $30,000 when we had the spike, it jumped up to $58,000. The next thing, next year it jumped to $83,000. I made more and better videos the next year, and it jumped up to $143,000. So plan in advance, get creative people, and make the videos, and make them good. I mean, sometimes you'll get people that aren't creative, and I've seen people take this process. I saw one, honestly, they went and made the videos, and they wanted to get some money to fix the masonry in some old church. And, you know, like they had some old warden coming around, and he's pointing to a crack in the church and saying, "We'd really like some money to fix this crack up." I'm thinking, for goodness sake, if you've got, and masonry, what you do is you have some poor lady wheeling a pram with a doll in it, and you have a whopping great block come down and smash the pram to bits, and you say, "We can't have this, can we?" I mean, there's just, you know, you've got to do it. You've got to have a bit of smart. But, you know, somebody's saying, "Oh, I'd like you to give us some more money to fix the masonry." That just, yeah, anyway. So, let me just give a couple of things and then we will go. Some of the other, I've got another couple of videos I'd just love to show you, but we just haven't got the time. We've got some more later on. But components of the commitment day, this was a big faith-raising thing. So we had special Bible readings, handwritten, not just off the shelf, handwritten to go with the sermon series. Small group studies that went with those. We had a ministry and vision dinner. I didn't ask for money at the ministry and vision dinner. It happened normally the week before the commitment series. But we had a vision dinner and a ministry dinner, which we would cast vision and celebrate the ministries of the year. It was a big slap-up affair. I would make a vision speech, and then we would celebrate what was going on. I mean, one year, Bruce, who was the Minister for Evangelism, we'd had a cracker year of evangelism, and something like 80 people had got saved, 80 adults or young adults. And we had about 250 people come to the dinner, and Bruce had arranged for 40 of these people to come to the dinner. And I turned the thing over to Bruce, basically saying, "Bruce, can you tell us who's got saved?" Bruce comes forward, talks a bit about evangelism and says, "Everybody who's given their lives to Jesus this year, would you stand please?" All over the room, people are standing up. And it's just electric. And people saying, "We know what this church is on about. It's not on about mucking around. It's on about winning people for the kingdom." And so your vision gets just re-established in what you're doing. So that was part of it, you see. We used to have a day of prayer. I'm racing on those things. We had a 4 or 5 or 6 week sermon series to build faith or cast vision, one or the other. Normally, two rolled in together. I will talk a lot more about that later on. We had the endorsement, particularly at the start. I had the endorsement of the most significant lay leader. I had one guy in the church, and you'll probably have one in your church, who everybody listens to. And we had long conversations about this all. He was on side, and I got him up to say this was a good thing. Once he said it was a good thing, most of the rest of the church said, "Yeah, it's got to be a good thing, because Alan says it's a good thing." I didn't have to do that after the first or second time. But when I was doing it for the first time, I wanted to make sure that all my ducks were in a row and that this guy, who everybody respected, everybody liked, everybody knew, that he was on board. And he was. He was a great fellow with a great gospel heart. People ask, "What if my income goes down next year?" I would say to them, "Well, look, some incomes go down, some goes up. It sort of evens out." So I wouldn't be too worried about that. "Let not your left hand know what your right hand is doing," they would ask. Well, if you look in Matthew's gospel, the whole context of it was in terms of giving alms or in praying or in fasting in such a public way that you would stand before men and women and say, "Look, what a good boy am I." Obviously, you can't overextend that, or you'd never have a prayer meeting. You'd never have a prayer meeting if you took that absolutely literally. And I would say to them, "Look, I'm just doing this because David did it. right? Not because of any way. And they, but, you know, I've been doing it, been there a long time. I think I said, you guys know my heart. I'm not doing this to tell you what a great minister I am. I'm doing this because I'm your leader, and I need to do what I'm asking you to do. You sign your name because it's a faith issue, not a money issue. Expect what was 30 to 40% of people signed the cards, and they give 80 to 85% of the money. A friend of mine said he got pretty much 90% of his congregation to sign the cards. He interviewed me on a TV thing, and I said, you must be a genius, because I could never get more than about 30. So don't be worried about that, right? Because the 60% that aren't signing are not giving, all right? It's very rare. The ones who say my giving is between me and God, by and large, are not giving. I know there's significant exceptions. I know that. I understand that. But those ones, the ones who are absolutely keen on absolute secrecy, are the ones who basically are not giving to you. And if they leave, well, nobody wants anybody to leave, but I would just smile at them, and I would know that they would take their non-giving down to another church. I wasn't losing any money. I was sad to lose people. I never wanted to lose people, and I don't think I ever did much. But if they did, I wasn't going to back off on a gospel issue just because somebody might get a bit worried about it. I got positive feedback from givers. Here you go, you see. If you are a tither, right, you want everybody to be a tither, right? If you're a generous person, you want everybody to share the joy of generosity. You're not going to alienate your generous people. You'll alienate your stingy ones, right? If you're going to alienate somebody. John Maxwell says you choose who you lose, right? Even Jesus lost people. Now, you don't want to lose anybody from a pastoral perspective, but you will lose someone. And if you don't do this, right, if you don't lose, if you don't put high commitment and high challenge, you will lose the high commitment and high challenge people. They'll go to the Pentecostals, where they will get challenged. And what you will keep are the low commitment, low challenge people. But if you put high commitment and high challenge, those generous, gospel-hearted people who want to save the world for Jesus, they're on board. And the other ones, they'll leave. Well, sad. But Jesus lost people. Peter said, to whom will we go? You have the words of eternal life because Jesus was losing faith. Not that you want that. Not that you're forcing people to go. Not that you're saying, get out of here. But some people won't go on the journey for winning the kingdom of God. If you want to win Canberra, there'll be some people who don't want to do it. Well, okay, let them not want to do it in somebody else's church. Where are we going? There'll be some nervousness in the 60 to 65%. Well, I had that. Look, they're the ones who didn't sign. I had that for the first or second time, but after the increases in the money came in, which was spectacular, they just all said nothing. Or they started to get on board. I never went out and said, you people are a lot of stingy folk. I never did anything like that. I just went out and thanked everybody for their great gospel generosity. And the 60 to 65% started to realise that there was a new way of doing things in the church that was actually funding the kingdom of God, and some of them would come round. Some of them never would, but most of them stayed. But they would gradually come on board. Some of them never did. I've talked about you choose who you lose. And then I wrote a number of follow-up thank you letters to them, and I could spend a bit of time talking about that, but I will just pause because I know we probably should be morning tea time, and I know that you'll go nuts if you don't have that. So if you want to, yes, sure. Oh, well, yes, look, I left parish ministry 10 years ago, and I'm quite willing to accept that digitally we've moved on. So if I was doing this now, I would probably have my card, but I would get a lot of smart techie people or millennials around me and say, can we do this in any smarter way? And even as I got older at Fig Tree, I had a team of about 15 to 20 gung-ho young adults, and I'd get them around me and I'd say to them, talk to me about what's going on in your space because I don't understand any of it anymore. So totally, I'd probably still do the card, but exploring online ways to do it and online ways to register it, yes, I wouldn't want to say no to that at all. Yeah. But that's, you know, I recognise the world has moved on, and it's moved on very fast. Okay. Yeah, look, maybe you could ask it personally, and we probably should have dinner, morning tea, unless you're the boss, so Steve, so you tell me whether you...
One more question,
okay. Yep. Oh, I published the general terms, yes, I told people... Yes, and I certainly did that. I didn't tell people what individuals would give, as I said. I was the only one. But what I did, I'm a bit of a cricket tragic, so we were doing it at the start of November. By the start of December, pretty much, see, the cards don't all come in on one day. Two-thirds of them tended to come in on the commitment day, and then they would dribble in over the next few weeks. And I would make probably an interim announcement of what was going on, and I would just encourage them to keep on putting their cards in. And I would say it's something in life. You know, if you haven't had the opportunity to put your card in, please do so. You will make the treasurer a very, very happy man. You know, say it like that. And then in December, we'd finish it all up. Then I wrote a letter, samples are in the book, to all of the congregation, and a thank you letter. Now, for the ones who hadn't given, that just would have a general thank you and what the whole total was. For the people who had given, it would be the same letter, but at the end, I wish to thank you very much for your contribution of X. And then that would be a form letter, but I would sign every one of them over the cricket. I'd sit down one day for the cricket and I'd sign about 700 or 800 letters. And I would write as much as possible a handwritten note to everyone. Depending on their situation, you know, really glad that little Jenny's out of hospital and something like that. So I tried, and I used to figure that if people can give me this buckets of money, I can sit down for one day and sign letters. Yeah, so, okay. Okay, right, thanks. Thank you.